Episode of Tales from the Garage. Tonight we bring you four tales from the unknown. Let's begin. She commandeered the room in the basement of her dorm as soon as she realized she would have to pull an all-nighter in order to prepare for tomorrow's final exam. Her roommate Jenna liked to get to bed early, so she packed up everything she thought she would need and went down the stairs to study some more. It was 2 o'clock when she realized she left one of her textbooks upstairs on her bed. With a dramatic sign, she rose and climbed the stairs slowly to her third floor dorm room. The lights were dim in the long hallway and the old boards creaked under her weary tread. She reached her room, turned the handle as softly as she could, pushing the door open just enough to slip inside so that the hall lights wouldn't wake her roommate. The room was filled with a strange metallic smell. She frowned a bit, her arms breaking out into chills. There was a strange feeling of malice in the room, as if a malevolent gaze were fixed upon her. It was a mind trick, the all-nighter catching up with her. She could hear her, Jenna breathing on the far side of the room, a heavy sound, almost as if she had been running. Jenna must have picked up a cold during the last tense week before finals. She crept along the wall until she reached her bed, groping among the covers for the story history book. In the silence, she could hear a steady drip, drip, drip sound. She sighed silently. Facilities would have to come fix the sink in the bathroom again. Her fingers crossed onto the textbook. She picked it up softly and withdrew from the room as silently as she could. Relieved to be out of the room, she hurried back downstairs, collapsed into an overstuffed couch, and studied until 6 o'clock. She finally decided that enough was enough. If she slipped downstairs now, she can get in a couple hours sleep before her 9 o'clock exam. The first of the sun rays were beaming through the windows as she slowly slid the door open, hoping not to awaken Jenna. Her nose was met by an earthy, metallic smell a second before her eyes registered the scene in her dorm room. Jenna was spread eagle on top of her bed against the far wall, her throat cut from ear to ear, and her nightdress stained with blood. 2 drips of blood fell from the saturated blanket with a drip, drip noise that sounded like a leaky faucet. Scream after scream poured from her mouth. She couldn't stop herself any more than she could cease wringing her hands. All along the hallway, doors slammed and footsteps came running down the passage. Within moments, other students had gathered in the doorway, and one of her friends gripped her arm with a shaky hand and pointed a trembling finger toward the wall. Her eyes widened in shock at what she saw. Then she fainted into her friend's arms. On the wall above her bed, written in her roommate's blood, were the words, "Aren't you glad you didn't turn on the light?" And that's the title of the story.
Oh, you're right. It would have given it away.
I told you, man. I couldn't do it like that. That was a freaky story right there.
I want to say I've heard something like that before.
There's probably a lot of tales like...
Like it, or...
I want to say there was altered. A movie like that where they, like, aren't you glad you something...
Aren't you glad I didn't say orange?
Yeah. It was that one, wasn't it? The so. Orange thing? Yeah.
Well, guys, who's going to go next? In this little...
I got it.
Alright. Here we go.
And I guess I could go ahead and name the title, but that title is Why I'm No Longer a 911 Dispatcher. This is... I arrived at the 911 call center at about 6 a.m. to trade shifts with my friend Caden, who worked the night shift. I said, "Oh, thank the Lord," he laughed as I walked through the door. "I was just about to die from sleep deprivation," he yelled. A lot of people in the center took the night shift because they say that's when the more interesting calls take place. Me, on the other hand, usually handle the more simpler calls, and I guess you could call it, and I like my job. Caden took his coffee from his desk, took a sip, and walked out of the center. I sighed and put the headset on and waited. So, ring, ring. As soon as I heard the phone, I immediately picked it up and answered, 911, what's your emergency, I asked. My dog's leg is stuck in a fence and it's bleeding really bad. He sounded like he was a child, maybe 7 or 8. So I don't know who to call, the kid told me, whimpering. I said, what's your address? I asked him. He told me his address and we figured everything out. Soon it was rescued and I guess they were fine. But about 30 minutes later, I got another call. But I grabbed the phone and answered it like usual. I said, 911, what's your emergency? But I just heard silence. 911, I said, more angered at this time, and what is your emergency? The voice on the other line whispered into the phone and replied with, too late, and then hung up. A few seconds after that call, I got another call. All I heard was screaming, followed with a loud slicing noise, and then silence. I held my breath hoping it was just a prank, but I didn't think it was. I got on my computer trying to trace the call, but eventually I did, and figured it came from a secluded forest in Colorado. We got some officers to go out there and check it out. But what they found was frightening. It was a single dog with all of its legs chopped off and a little boy impaled with a stick. Whenever they told me about it, I think I almost pissed my pants whenever I found all this out. I thought about the call earlier, a little boy and his dog. But another day passes after the incident and I'm at my house. I called in SIG, which I never do, to take in everything that happened the previous day. All my thoughts hit me like a tsunami. I don't know if it was the same boy from the call who killed him. Why did the killer do this? I don't know what happened and I still don't. But a few days later, I came back to work and hoping everything was back to normal, and of course it wasn't. I got a call as soon as I sat down and put my headset, of course. I answered like always. 911, what's your emergency? My baby is choking. What's your address? I could hear wailing and coughing in the background. My address is 123 BFE. We'll be there shortly, ma'am. I informed the EMTs and they drove there immediately. I got another call about 45 minutes later. 911, what's your emergency? I said. Too late, the man replied. Then he hung up. I traced the call yet again, and it was another forest in Colorado. We heard another police squad go down there and found something terrifying. A little baby in his high chair, dead with blood, pouring out of his mouth and other gory details, along with an older woman with slit wrists. I quit my job the next day and started working somewhere else. I was scarred in my experience as a 911 dispatcher, and I want to share my story on Reddit. But let me tell you, if you decide to be a 911 dispatcher and you're reading this, please reconsider. That's it.
Nice. Nice.
How does one become that, like, how does one get that job?
Dispatcher?
Yeah.
Usually if you go through any agency that you apply for that has their own communications center, you can either start working with them and get your certification. The state requires a certification for you to be able to be a dispatcher. And once you actually start with an agency, obviously, you know, you do all the footwork. You used to get your certification. And you pretty much just build off from there. They're actually, I think they just, I think Governor Abbott just approved that, as a matter of fact, this legislative session has 911 dispatchers are going to be officially labeled or known as first responders. So
that makes sense.
Yeah, you would think they would have already been labeled that because they get the call as a dispatcher. They're the first ones technically responding to an emergency because they're getting the call and having to get all the details squared away and everything. But not until the session. Long time.
Nice.
Alrighty. So, the story I'm bringing tonight, it's called Dear Stranger. And it was posted by Reddit user The Yurian. You hid me from my family. You lied to the police about having me in your trunk, and you told everyone from my childhood that I had died. Without you, I wouldn't have lived past 10 years old. What I'm attempting to do now is to honor a man whose name I never learned. A man who sacrificed everything for someone he didn't even know. So I'll start from the beginning. I was raised amongst a large family in a warm southern town in the U.S. My parents took care of me like their lives depended on it from as early as I can remember. But not just them. My day-to-day was filled with hand and foot treatment from everyone within my community, or what I called my extended family. Aunt Barb was in charge of the grocery store, and whenever we stopped by, she would ensure that everything we needed, we had, free of charge. Uncle Matt was the chief of police. Everywhere you looked in our small town, the extension of his protection could be found, ready and waiting. And then there was Papa. I was to see him every day, Mother told me. I didn't like him, to put it plainly. He would parade me through town for a couple of hours, getting all my aunts and uncles with a large fake smile. He would sit me on his lap and bounce me like a baby, even when I was 9. The worst part was knowing how afraid everyone was of him, but never being able to talk about it. I mentioned it once to my mother, who held my lips and told me I had let the devil get my tongue. In August of 1977, I was just a few days away from being 10 years old. On this particular night, I had been struggling to fall asleep. My mother and father were arguing in the living room, and that wasn't very common for our home. I finally caved and snuck over to my door, creaking it open just enough to be able to listen in. She can't. Why would she understand? I'm not even positive I do anymore, my father said in an infuriated whisper. Do not say that. You know what could happen if anyone heard you speaking such foolishness. Papa knows what he's doing. Do not doubt him. My mother's tone gradually descended from indignant to righteous. I could hear the fight leave my father. Good night, he said before closing his bedroom door behind himself and my mother the same to hers. I wasn't sure then what they had been arguing about, but I was never exposed to very much negativity, and on the rare occasion I was, it stuck with me. The next day, my family gathered at the city hall. I loved when we all got together seeing other kids, and being able to play for a couple of hours was often the highlight of my week. Unfortunately, this gathering was unlike my previous experiences. I was summoned on stage and made to sit on Papa's lap, as he sat like a king in front of the entire town. My mother and father sat in the front row where I could see them. Father was sweating a lot and his knee was bouncing impatiently. My mother seemed more composed, but still less so than usual. All right, everyone, please take your seats and quiet down for me, Papa began. Today's a special day. Can anyone tell me why? A little boy in the audience raised his hand, seated on top of his mother's lap. Because it's Sunday and God has granted us breath, he said, shyly. Well, yes, my sweet child, but there's more Anyone else have the answer? A young woman a few rows back from the stage raised her hand with a grin. Papa gestured her in her direction. Yes, ma'am? Because, Papa, today you and your daughter become a true family, before the rite of souls on her 10th birthday. You are absolutely correct. Papa licked his lips and nodded at Uncle Matt. An officer approached the girl's row and held out his hand. The young woman smiled and blushed before accepting it and was escorted backstage. My sweet Rebecca comes home with her father tonight. I have waited a decade to take her into my home. A difficult sacrifice to make, but it was for the greater good. I could see my father shifting uncomfortably in his seat the more Papa talked. When God told me about the rite of souls, I thought to myself, can I do that? Am I strong enough? Do you want to know what his answer was? Yes, Papa, everyone chanted. You are strong enough because I've willed it so. You see, our God doesn't put us through challenges we aren't fit to task for. He is truth, and he is final, and through him, so are we. The audience clapped widely, everyone except my father. When the cheers died down, Papa stroked my hair through his fingers like a villain in an old movie petting a cat. Father Eric, he said, his tone going dry as he dropped his facade of love and family. Uncle Matt grabbed my father by the arm and walked him on stage. His face was full of panic and confusion. You were charged with the protection of my daughter, and you've done so quite well. So it breaks my heart having to summon you to the stage today for disciplinary reasons rather than as praise for a job well done. Papa took me off his lap and stood to his feet, addressing the crowd directly now. 10 years ago, Father Eric and Mother Leanne were a part of our extensive search to find a suitable host for my seed. They were chosen, not by me, no, but by God. So I placed my seed deep into her womb and prayed to God for the safe delivery of my child. He held my hand tightly and gave me a dramatic look before looking the crowd and then finally to my father. Father Eric is a betrayer of faith. The crowd hissed with disgust. I won't have a faithless man in my town, Father. The crowd cheered with vigor. My father looked at me with distress in his eyes. Even with the crowd screaming for blood, I could hear him speak his final words to me. You must escape. The police dragged him from the stage, through the crowd and into the street outside, where he was handcuffed and held at gunpoint. Papa walked out behind the crowd, holding me on top of his shoulders as if we were at an amusement park. The crowd had slowly gathered in a circle around Father after returning from a wooded area just near the town hall. I denounce you of your title and of the honor gifted to you by means of parenting my child. You are guilty in the eyes of God, and I sentence you to death. I could see Mother standing along the inner ring of the circle, clenching a rock tightly in her fist alongside several hundred of the men and women I had perceived as being my family. She was the first to throw. After that, I couldn't watch. I covered my eyes as Papa held me above the crowd. Don't worry, Angel. Daddy's got you. And that's all this Reddit user wrote. Apparently they're still working on part two.
So this is like a cult that was following in this town.
Every single bit of this thing sounded like a cult.
Yeah, that's what I figured. It's a cult.
Yeah.
It's just crazy, bro.
Yeah.
I bet. It sounds interested to hear part two whenever it comes available. Alright, so for the last story tonight, I don't want to give away the title because the title's going to give away the entire story, so I'll hold the title to the end.
Do you have the user's name at least?
S.E. Schlosser. S.E. Schlosser. Not Schlosser. Paula Schultz.
Schultzer.
No, that's not it.
Oh.
I was just trying to get a little reference to Kill Bill, but okay, I failed. Alright, here we go. Go straight to the store and don't turn around. Fool around, I'm sorry. His mother says sternly as she handed over the money. Your father's boss is coming to dinner tonight, and we're having his favorite meal, liver and onions. It's important that we make a good impression, so get the best liver they got. I will, Ma. Tommy sulked. His mother had really been after him since he brought home a failing report card. Tommy grabbed his bicycle from the garage and rode down the street. Then saw his friend, Chad. Come on, Tommy, Chad called. The gang's playing baseball over at the park, and we need a pitcher. Immediately, all thoughts of his errands fled from Tommy's mind. The boys headed toward the park. Tommy pitched a no-hitter to win the game for his team. But by the time it was over, it was dark. Then Tommy remembered his errand. The liver, he grasped. I got to get to the store. But all the local groceries were closed. My mom was going to kill me, he grasped. First the bad report card, and now this. He would be grounded for life. As he rode home past the cemetery, he got an idea. It was an awful idea, but it would save him from the even more awful fate that awaited him if he came home without a liver. His great uncle had died a few days ago, and had been buried in the cemetery. What harm would it do to remove it? His uncle certainly didn't need it anymore. Tommy hurried home as silently as he could and got his father's shovel. He returned to the cemetery and began digging up his great uncle's grave. That night, his mother cooked up the liver and onions, and the boss raved about the meal in such a good time that he didn't leave until quite late. Tommy went to bed that night, relieved he had gotten away with it. He fell asleep almost as soon as his head hit the pillow, but woke with a start soon after, sure that he had heard a voice. "Where's my liver?" A ghostly voice rose from the staircase. Deep and guttural, Tommy grasped in fear and flung himself over underneath the covers as the thud of heavy footsteps reached the top of the steps. Thump, thump, thump. The footsteps drew nearer until they reached Tommy's door. "Who's got my liver?" the horrible voice asked again. "Go away! Go away!" Tommy whispered repeatedly. His whole body trembled in terror as once more the voice asked, "Where's my liver? Who's got my liver?" Sheer terror made him suddenly bold. Tommy threw back the covers and found the shriveled white face of his great uncle right above him. "We ate your liver," he shouted. "I know you did, Tommy," the rotting corpse of his great uncle said softly, stretching out his bony hands toward the boy's shaking body. Tommy screamed. The next morning, Tommy's parents discovered their son laying dead on top of his bed. His liver had been ripped right out from his body. But the autopsy proved that the boy had already died of fright before his liver was removed. Livers for dinner. Told you, gave it away. You want me to tell you a story?
Liver and onions?
Liver and onions is...
That's fucking gross. I can't even... I like onions. I don't like liver. I've never...
How old was the kid? Did it say?
No. Like 9, maybe?
How does he know how the liver looks like?
I don't know.
Some kids are smart at certain ages. Maybe he's one of those kids that's...
I mean, he pitched a no-hitter, so he's got to be pretty great.
Well, he might be athletically good, necessarily smart.
Pitched a no-hitter, I was like, damn. Okay.
I'm just saying, man. This one's kind of hard to believe.
Yeah, that sounds like some straight-up, like a writer, like a story writer. I don't know.
Homeboy's a surgeon and a fucking...
Yeah, I know.
All-star pitcher.
I'm an all-star pitcher?
Yeah.
Too bad all that went to hell, because...
He died.
He died of fright.
He died of fright.
He died of getting his liver ripped out. He died of fright.
Too bad. Well, guys, this has been another episode. This is actually part 2. Tales from the Garage part 2, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. So keep this thing going. So next time you see another episode, go ahead and take a listen, because you already know you're going to get a little scare out of it. Hopefully a little scare. And hopefully we'll have part 2 of Panda Story, because I'm more interested in... Want to know
what goes on? I'm gonna subscribe and see. Probably message them, see how far they are, when it's gonna drop.
Yeah. Well, this has been a production of Your Average Podcast. We'll see you next time.